Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome an accomplished entrepreneur, a well-known author, a fellow member of the YPO, talking to us from the UK, Mr. Giuseppe Stigliano. Giuseppe, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's a great pleasure to be here with you today.
Thank you. Giuseppe is an entrepreneur, a manager, an author, and a keynote speaker. He's the Global Chief Executive Officer of Spring Studios. He's an adjunct professor at the international universities and business schools, and he's an author. He's authored three books with international guru Mr. Philip Kotler, Retail 4.0, On Life Fashion, and the most recent, Redefining Retail, 10 Guiding Principles for a Post-Digital World, and we'll be speaking about this book today. And as I mentioned, he's a fellow member of the YPO. So Giuseppe, before we talk about your book, tell me about your journey in brief.
Well, my journey is, as you've said, I live in the UK. I live in London now. I spend about a week or 10 days a month in the United States because Spring Studios, the company I run, has offices in Los Angeles, New York, London, Milan, and perhaps new countries very soon, but I can't spoil. I was born and raised in a region of the south of Italy called Calabria, which is literally where I belong and the place where at some point I want to go back. I moved to Milan and then to the world when I was 20. I started traveling. I lived in Paris. I lived in Madrid. I lived in London, of course. I lived in New York, Washington, D.C., and Milan again. So, I really enjoyed understanding different cultures, different mentalities, different worlds. And my work brought me around the world. I hold a PhD in marketing and economics. So I would say I am a good blend of academic background and practitioner in the sense that once I completed my PhD, I basically realized that I enjoyed teaching, but I wasn't that much into research. So I just decided to stay very close to academia. And that's why I'm still an adjunct professor at University College London here and a couple of universities in Milan with which I work. And at the same time, I've founded my company, sold my company, had multiple roles within WPP, and now I'm here in London running Spring.
Amazing. So let's talk about your book, the latest book, Redefining Retail, 10 Guiding Principles for a Post-Digital World. And you have written, co-authored three books, including this one with Philip Kotler. Before I ask any questions on this book, tell me about your association with Philip Kotler.
Well, so Philip Kotler is, I always say, is the equivalent of Spider-Man for my son, right? It's my superhero. Being a marketer, holding a PhD in marketing, working in marketing, you know, Philip Kotler is literally he's 92 this year. He wrote 65 plus books about marketing, sold 80 million copies. So to me, it's such a privilege to work with him. And the reason I happened to work with him is that 5 years ago, I gave a talk about retail and the changing landscape. That was prior to everything, basically. So prior to COVID, it was still the middle of the digital disruption and the world was changing. The world of retail was changing. So I gave my talk and literally 2 days before they told me, by the way, Philip Kotler would be in the room. And I said, what? So I was super excited and anxious. And, I just managed to channel all the adrenaline and the anxiety in the right direction. And I gave what is probably the best talk of my life, It worked very well. He wanted to see me. He asked me to work together on a project. We did a couple of things together. And then he ended up saying, you know what? I had in mind to write the foreword for your book, but I really, really like the approach and what we're doing. write it together. So we ended up being co-authors. Or wow. Ended up being his co-author. Mm-hmm. Because he liked basically my approach. And it was this blend between academia and experience and real world.
Yeah. Well, I'm much older than you, but I remember my first book in business school was Philip Kotler's book on marketing. But Giuseppe, let's talk about redefining retail. Let me start by asking you, what is the core message of this book?
Well, I guess the reason why we decided to opt for a title like this mm. is that we strongly believe that we need to redefine what we mean by retail and we need new guiding principles. This is due to a number of factors. Of course, COVID, of course, macroeconomic headwinds, of course, global geopolitical instability. Mm. Hence, supply chains need to be redefined. The approach to the market needs to be redefined. Mm. The concept of globalization itself needs to be refined. Mm. And so if you want the three core messages or the three major reasons why we believe that we need the new playbook mm. is that first, there is a process of B2Cization and progress. It's mm. been going on for a while, but now due to the acceleration of COVID and a number of other factors, we can no longer associate retail to B2C because there is direct to consumer, because you can bypass intermediaries, because if you are an influencer, you are the equivalent of a wholesaler back in the day, right? You have an audience, you are curating a collection, you can directly reach out to the audience and sell products. So what do we mean by retail? Mm. That's the very first question. Second one, companies were already struggling to isolate the an attribute importance and measure the role of each touch point when the world was digital and physical. So you had brick and mortar stores and you had, the e-commerce website and social media networks. And it was very hard to map the customer journey and attribute the relative importance to each and every channel so that as a company, you could decide how much money you wanted to allocate on each touch point. Mm. And that was already quite complicated because some of these touch points are not owned. So you don't necessarily have all the data you need and so on and so forth. And that was, let's say, prior to COVID. Or if you want, prior to 2022. Mm. Today, we have the virtual world as well. So what we say in the book is that the customer journey is becoming three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So you have physical, digital, and virtual. Mm. Meaning that there are 13-year-old people who are experiencing brands and interacting with brands through video games. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they have no experience with those brands in the physical world. Nor in the digital world. So that's a new journey. And what does this mean has to be the line. We don't know it. Mm. Last but not least, of course, AI, generative AI, the simple fact that you can now rely on something that for the first time in human history is able to create. Hence, technology is not only here to amplify human ideas, but in theory, at least, it can even create content. So what do we mean? What do we do with that? How can we leverage that? What is the role of humans? And so on and so forth. Mm. So these are the sort of key messages and key...
Amazing. Thank you. These are amazing messages. Thank you for sharing these. But also tell me, Giuseppe, how do these principles that you have outlined cater to the evolving consumer behaviors and needs? Because the young consumer, the Gen X, the Gen Z, the millennials and the Gen Alpha have very, very different needs as compared to a boomer like me.
Well, if there is one thing again, we talked about this three-dimensional customer journey because the idea is to map these new human beings with a different journey. I was born in 1981. So technically, I'm a late millennial or an old millennial, as I always. I'm quite close, but I'm not that into the segment. Having said that, it is true. They want completely different things. They have different priorities and their brains work in a different way. Hmm. I guess if there is one thing that is radically different is that, let's say, our generation or until my generation, let's put it this way, we can call ourselves digital immigrants while they are digital natives. In short, this means that for us, when we think of something that is digital or virtual, the distinction we do is if it's real, it can't be digital or virtual. So the dichotomy, we oppose the concept of real and digital / virtual. So this generation, whatever is digital or virtual is as much real as the physical world. So of course they get the difference between the physical world and the digital / virtual world, but they don't refer to that as real versus digital. That's a big thing, because my son, when he's seven and when he says goodbye to his friends after school, he says, "I see you later." And when I ask him, "What do you mean? I mean, we're going somewhere else. You're not seeing your friends." No, I see them online or play video games together. You know, it's just a different way of thinking, and the implications for goods or services experiences are very important. Let alone sustainability, let alone all the ideas about a number of other things. So it is absolutely paramount understanding the customer journey and mapping the customer personas and understanding as much as we can the human beings behind the data.
And you know, you're so right, but marketing has evolved over the years. And you know, I've been working now for 43 years. My question is, and we were always told how important storytelling was in building a strong narrative for a brand. I'd love to get your perspective on how important is storytelling in a digital age.
Well, it is probably the most important human skill that we need to protect and nurture in the age of artificial intelligence. As you've said, and I second that, marketing has changed a lot. Marketing used to be about making people want things. Push. It was a company manufacturing something, and then the marketing department, "Hey guys, please help us selling as much as we can."
Yeah.
Making people want things. In the age of AI, in the age of data, marketing should be about making things people want as opposed to making people want things.
Correct.
In that, we need to leverage data, we need to produce less so that we are more sustainable and we reduce waste. And we must produce things that we already know that will work because people love them. And we need to make sure that the way we tell the story, the way we connect emotionally and rationally also with people, is not only effective from a conversion rate standpoint, but it's also human, because technology, and we already see this with performance marketing, with hyper-targeted messages, and with generative AI, this will explode.
Correct.
To make sure we protect and nurture the human ability to tell the story in a human way. And again, it's not about telling the story, because telling the story is something that the generative AI can already do very well. My mother is 73. She's already familiarizing with ChatGPT, and she asked ChatGPT, "Hey, I need to put to bed two kids. They're 7 and 9. Their names are Carlo and Ginevra. Can you tell me a nice story that I can read to them in 10 minutes? And the protagonist should be the two of them in London during the Halloween night and whatever." And it comes up with a great story. So it's not about telling the story. It's about telling the story the human way. That's something we can protect and nurture.
Great response. Thank you. The other aspect of retail, now let me come to, is the whole element of personalization. Now, you know, when I was building and running Guardian Pharmacy, you know, which was handling over 1 million customers every year, personalization was important. But I wanted to get your perspective on how can personalization of the retail experience change in a digital world?
So let me tell you a story. I travel a lot. I take probably 90 or 95 airplanes every year. 80% of them are with the same airline company. A couple of weeks ago, I was in New York and I was flying back to London. literally 10 minutes after I sat on my seat, a flight attendant came with a gin and tonic, saying, "Mrs. Stigliano, I know this is your favorite. Please enjoy the trip." I was incredibly surprised. Frankly speaking, I was not in the mood for a gin and tonic, although I loved it. But I couldn't resist the temptation to say yes to that human, incredibly warm interaction.
Correct.
Now, I don't think she knows me or she remembers me. I'm perfectly aware that she has checked on an eye or on a tablet before, and she could check what was my preference and my taste and the last time I traveled, what I had drink, and so on and so forth. My point is, if you do the same thing, coming to me with an iPad in your hands, and you say, "Hey, Mr. Stigliano, what can I get you for drink? By the way, I know you like gin and tonic, right?" It's not the same.
No.
I mean, it's the same background. Behind the scenes, it's happening the same thing. But what I mean is, technology is cool, but people are warm. And we need people when it comes to personalize the interaction baked with data, you know, based on data. So my point is, people love personalization because this is the only way we know to be recognized as individuals. And this is in our DNA. Today, and so this is not new at all. But today, we can do this at scale. And with generative AI, we can do it even better than before.
Right.
What is the role of human beings? So, and in the story that I've shared, I think I tried to sort of highlight what I think is the role.
Well said. The other perspective I also wanted you to ask you was this whole, if I can use a strong term, demise of brick and mortar. I'd love to get your perspective on how do you think brick and mortar businesses have started to transition online, digitally, and what do you think, where do you think brick and mortars are going? Because all over the world, malls are lying empty.
So it's hard to generalize because it depends on a number of factors, including the industry, the sector, the geography, the digital alphabetization of the population in the place where the store is, and a number of other factors. So it's hard to generalize. Said that, in the book, in the upcoming book that you have mentioned, Redefining Retail, we talk a lot about the role of brick and mortar stores. And what we basically say is either a brick and mortar store is a destination or a want-to-go place, or there is no way it can succeed in such a world. So there is still some room for have-to-go places. Because sometimes you're at home, it's late, you forgot to buy some, you know, milk, for example. And if you have a little shop around the corner where you can just go grab the thing, it's not something, it's not a destination, right? It's not a place where you want to go. It's a place where you have to go. And it's convenient that you have it there. So there is some room for these stores. But the majority of stores, especially when it comes to fashion or when it comes to appliances or when it comes to even pharmacy, if you give me a service that in a couple of clicks with a fair for a fair fee, I can have it delivered to my place, you're out, right? So either we manage to build destinations, so places where people want to go for a reason, or it doesn't make sense for them to exist, with a few exceptions. Now, what do we mean by destination? Hard to say. I'll give you an example. As I've said, if I'm late and I need to grab a sandwich and a soda, me, the destination is convenience, a place where I can just go get in and out in 3 minutes. Problem is that myself, same person, if I go to the same brick and mortar store on a Saturday afternoon in the wine aisles, since I love wine and I have more time, if there is a sommelier telling me the story of the great wines that they sell, I would probably spend half an hour there or even an hour talking about wine with the sommelier and try to do the right pair with my food. And I'm the same human being in the same brick and mortar store wanting a completely different experience depending on the time of the day and the day in the week. If I turn the corner and there is some caviar there, although I don't like caviar, I can get very curious about why people want to spend so much money for eggs, fish eggs. And perhaps I spend some time there and I check the prices and the story of the product. So, and I'm still the same human being in the same place, completely different experience, because in the case of the wine, at least I had to buy some wine and I ended up buying some wine. But in the case of caviar, I'm just exploring or dreaming of the thing, and I'm considering that store as a showroom. So bottom line is, yes, we need to build destinations, and yes, experience is very important. But what do we mean by destination and experience? It's very hard to understand, considering that even the same human being in the same store can be interested in completely different experiences depending on the time of the day and the category of the product. So going back to the previous point, it's all about analyzing the customer personas, understanding the customer personas, understanding the customer journey. And then, since I need to build something that is a go-to place for people interested in something that they really need, so I want to go place, I need to make sure I find my segment and I serve my segment at, you know, the best possible way. And I need to make sure that no one can replicate that value proposition online in a cheaper and more convenient way. Otherwise, I'm just set to fail.
Great response. So I have time for two more questions for you. You know, we've been speaking about the digital age. We've been speaking about technology. My next question is about people. And retail has always been always about people. I want to ask you, how have you addressed the human element in retail in your book, especially in an age dominated by technology?
As I've said before, technology is very cool, but people are worm. And by worm, I mean that if there's, you know, there are a few things that generative AI and advanced technology lack. And they are, for sure, the absence of emotional connection, the inability to connect the dots, and to tolerate ambiguity. Which is something human beings are very good at. And, you know, if you start focusing on the fact that human beings are very good when it comes to ambiguity, so perhaps a client coming to the store and saying, you know, you have sales associates typically asking, can I help you? And some people say, no, sorry, I'm just browsing. I'm not interested in buying anything. But perhaps it's not true. It's just something that people are saying because they don't want to be bothered while they go, they have something in mind, right? This is ambiguity. This is a no behind a yes or a yes behind a no. Humans are very good at understanding these nuances, but this is not something that computers or artificial intelligence can understand so far. Context or bird eye view. You can tell me that the right five steps to deliver an excellent customer experience in a fashion store in the city of London are A, B, C, and D. And you can tell me that this is based on thousands of interviews and data and experiences and so on and so forth. But you cannot take into account the specific nature of that store, the character of the people who are running the store, type of clients, the fact that the CFO of the company the year before allocated a lot of money on something that didn't work. And although somebody else can say that that is the right thing to do, he would not do it again because it didn't work the previous year. This complexity, only humans can grasp, get, and navigate. This is not for machines.
Great response. Thank you. And clearly the message you're giving is technology is very cool, but without human beings, the customer cannot be managed, no matter how great the technology may be. And my last question to you, Giuseppe, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Most of our viewers and listeners are under 34, young, spread across the world. A lot of them are startup entrepreneurs, aspiring startup entrepreneurs. So my question is, what would you say are three lessons from a marketing guru like you for startups as they start to roll out their own brands out into the market?
So first of all, I have founded many companies. I failed a few times. I sold a couple of them, and I currently all shares in 12 different companies. So I get you. I'm with you. I'm like you. Trust me. I'm a manager today, so I'm the CEO of a company, and I'm just small, tiny shareholder in the company. But in the others, I own shares and I manage, and I'm very active. So I understand what you're going through, and I feel it. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. First one. Choose a job that loves you back. So too many times I hear stories about, you know, if you love something, just do it. If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you have a great dream, just pursue your dreams. I disagree. I think we should literally choose a job that loves us back, meaning that you need to choose something that you're good at. You need to choose something that makes sense for the world, for society, for the country in which you want to operate, for the people who are supposed to buy your product, and so on. And you need to make sure you find someone who is interesting in giving you enough money to cover your costs and to make some profit. So choose a job that loves you back means that you need to get the same amount, say, of energy and time spent and resources, or even more, that you put into the thing. Otherwise, yes, you can follow your passion, but if you want to be an artist, it's okay. If you want to make a difference, that's another story. And absolutely, if you want to make and if you want to at some point give back to other people, you need to, if you want to get there, you need to make it work. And that's a very first one. Second one is start early. Because another story that I always hear is, you know, fail fast, learn quick. The culture of failure, it's great. But the hard truth is that if you are 40 and you have kids and you have the responsibility of a family, or even if you don't have kids, but you have the responsibility perhaps of your parents, or the responsibility, whatever responsibility, which is typically associated to age, way harder to fail at that point, which means that you are less prone to risk, which means that you're less inclined to innovate, because innovation by definition is an experiment with a known outcomes. And you know, you can't risk that much. The third is, this is particularly true for entrepreneurs. Please, since the very first day, focus on the exit. Whatever it is, the exit can be even, I don't want to do an exit. I want to run the company for the rest of my life. So it's by exit. I don't mean that you need to sell the company. But please make sure that you have a very clear trajectory. If it's, I want to do this for the rest of my life, fine. Let's structure everything in that direction then. If it's, I want to sell the company within 3 years, let's make sure you know who should buy that company and why, so that you can define your roadmap and go in that direction since the very first day. If it's about, I want to do at least a couple of rounds so that I get to at least this valuation, so that I'm more attractive for private equities versus industrial or strategic investors or whatever it is, fine. The more you have a clear idea since the very beginning, the better. And this is not to say that you need to know everything since the very first day. The majority of cases, you pivot 30 times. But in terms of this exercise, in terms of excitability, forces you to ask you questions that you won't regret, trust me.
Well said. And on that note, Giuseppe, my friend, and your three wonderful lessons, choose a job that loves you, start early. And the third one, you said, focus on exit, whatever the exit may be. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own amazing journey in the world of marketing and branding. Thank you for talking to me about your book, Redefining Retail, 10 Guiding Principles for a Post-Digital World. I really enjoyed listening to so many different perspectives of retail, technology, and people from you. Thank you for speaking to me. Good luck with your book and all the best.
It was a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.